Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, why are you studying that road atlas of the United States?
I'm just trying to figure out how far it is to drive from Valparaiso, Indiana to Bunker Hill, Indiana. Patrick, where'd you go? I need you here to do the podcast. Patrick, I noticed that you are having some coffee out of the Rock in the Suburbs coffee
mug. I am. Isn't that a handsome mug?
It really is nice.
Yeah, the boom box and the black and orange looks really sharp on a white mug background, and it keeps my coffee nice and warm.
Very good. Yes. So consider that an endorsement for our coffee mugs, which you can buy at teespring.com, and you just go there and you search Rock in the Suburbs, and you can find the coffee mugs and the t-shirts that we have.
We're keeping it real basic right now, but it's a really handy item, and the t-shirts look pretty solid too, so why not?
Yeah,
so summer's coming.
That's right.
Yeah, and you need the short sleeve.
You want to be ready.
Yeah.
Makes good beach wear too.
Yeah.
Or by the pool.
Cover up.
Yes. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's talk about fan mail. So we're doing fan mail week. We got some really good feedback about the Van Halen episodes,
yeah,
right?
I was surprised at the level of intellectual thought that went into many of these responses.
It is a bit surprising,
really,
given that I'm not sure the band ever gave that put that much intellectual thought into itself. But you know, I think we were onto something here. So let's start here with an email. Well, hang on. So this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And let's start here with an email from Joe Fleischer.
Okay.
Longtime listener, right?
Great to hear from him.
Joe says, "Hi guys, I've been enjoying the week's shows on Van Halen, but I have to weigh in on something that's not been brought up. This is not an original thought, but I've always felt that Van Halen's musical revolution was built on the fact that they brought bright Hollywood smiles to hard rock. Rock was a pretty dour affair in 1977. Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, ELO, etc. all had a grim, serious presence on stage and in interviews. I don't think you could even find a picture of Jimmy Page smiling bright on stage. If there was ever a picture of Black Sabbath at a pool party, their publicity people hid those photos from view."
Right. Is that Ozzy at the bottom? Somebody should check on it.
Exactly. Could you like imagine seeing like Black Sabbath in like shorts? Right. Okay. Back to the letter. It wasn't just that Van Halen smiled. The music was the soundtrack to a party. David Lee Roth was the Toastmaster, and it was easy to imagine them playing cover songs at pool parties all around Southern California, which is basically their origin story.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that smiling and that party spirit led to the whole LA rock thing. I'm not sure how Poison, Warrant, Def Leppard, or any of those other pop bands ever got defined as metal or hard rock, except that they dressed like Van Halen, grew their hair like Van Halen, and especially smiled like Van Halen. Mm. Then he goes on to say, "Love the show. Love to get a sticker to paper over the one from the old show on my Honda Pilot." So we can definitely take care of that.
Yeah. It's as suburban as it comes. I love it. Yeah, because those old stickers weren't so hot.
And he has some show ideas and then just says thanks and keep rocking, Joe Fleischer. So thanks, Joe, for the email. And I think we hinted at this a little bit. Maybe we didn't quite make it that clear, but there was this notion with Van Halen that they really just like enjoyed the music that they were playing. Mm-hmm. And that definitely came through and was what I think allowed for a lot of their crossover success, right? That made it, made their version of hard rock more appealing to the masses, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, our good friend Kevin Spain, who joined us for that week, you know, he, in relating some of his personal tales, you know, you got that sense, right? It was like, yeah, that's what we partied to, man. You know, because it was Van Halen and David Lee Roth was right there. So
totally. And then the other thing in this email is where he talks about sort of the bands that may have been influenced in some way or the bands that came later with that same kind of vibe. Maybe the bands were influenced or certainly the labels wanted to get more bands like that because they could sell. And I always find that this happens a lot in music history where sort of one band does something really well and then the copycats kind of come in and they don't do it as well.
Right.
But I don't think you can blame the original for that. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no way to really control who's going to try to rip your stuff off in rock and roll. You know, it happens all the time and it endlessly cycles through. But I think you're right, Jim. I think that's well said. It's almost like, you know, dubbing off a tape, and each generation gets a little more diluted, right?
Right.
By the time you get down to the 10th or 11th generation, it's,
you know,
pretty
and then
bad.
About 10 years or 12 years later, it got to the point where it was so ridiculous.
Somebody has to come in and blow it all up again.
That, right. Yeah. And then you have grunge, right? That basically said, get rid of all this. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So, okay.
Thank you, Joe. But I also wanted to address something really quickly, Jim. Joe sent us another note, actually about a more recent show. When I was in Nashville interviewing Tyler Mahan Coe of Cocaine and Rhinestones, and we thank Tyler for that. That was really fun. Joe brought up something about Tyler's father, David Allen Coe, and I was not really aware of this. I got to say, if I was, I may have heard about it at some point and kind of forgotten about it. But essentially, as far as I can understand, and I did a little research on this after the fact, David Allen Coe put out a couple of records in the 1980s, early 1980s, that were sort of underground records that contained a lot of things that people accused him of being racist, misogynist, just basically ugly in every way. And there was an article written in the New York Times by Neil Strauss on September 4th, 2000, talking about how David Allen Coe had sort of started selling these albums again, although he wasn't really addressing it. He was making money off of it, in essence. And so I did a little research on this and especially found some stuff that Tyler wrote, and we won't spend too much time on this, but there seems to be a line on this issue where you stand on one side or the other. There are some people who think this is just very bad satire and parody with no humor in it at all, and that's where Tyler stands. He claims that his father wrote Neil Strauss a long letter refuting some of the factual errors in this article and never got a response, and was never addressed by Strauss or the New York Times. So there's that. But there's also, when you look at David Allen Coe's history, you know, he was a rebellious kind of person who was no holds barred and didn't really take much care in some of the subjects he addressed. On the other side, he did have a black drummer in his band for 7 years. So, you know, there's a lot of things that make this, you know, kind of a situation where it's really murky and unclear. I've never heard the music. Don't ever plan to hear it. Don't have any time or interest in, you know, even bothering with something like that. But just wanted to lay that out. And I thank you, Joe, for pointing that out. I think it's important. And obviously, we're trying to talk to Tyler. You know, it wasn't a whole David Allen Coe thing, but this is a really important point. And I'm glad you brought it up.
But at one point in your interview with Tyler, Tyler did, you know, talk about his father and his father's music and playing in his father's band. So we couldn't just leave this out there and not address this email from Joe. So thank you for that. And wherever you end up falling on that issue really, to me, has almost no impact on how you can enjoy what Tyler's doing with his country music history.
Totally agree.
Podcast.
Yeah,
so
totally different.
Okay. All right. So thanks for that. Let's get back to Van Halen.
Okay.
So we have a couple of calls here about Van Halen.
All right.
Let's play one right now.
Test the machine.
Hey, Jim and Patrick. Craig Rosen here, calling from beautiful Porter Ranch, California, a suburb, of course. Finally calling in with a long-threatened phone call. Got a few things to talk to you guys about. First of all, unfortunately, my dog's been down with a broken toe, so my regular listening schedule is completely off. You know, I used to listen daily while walking the dog, but with him unable to go for walks, it's messed up my listening schedule. But the good thing is that I was able to binge while cleaning the pool at the mother-in-law's rental house. And I heard that whole week, the Bel Air week, in just like pretty much one listening session while cleaning the pool. Great band. I had never heard them before. And, you know, they sound great. Remind me of Big Star a lot. And then not only was their music great, but everything they, you know, just about every band and artist they mentioned in their interview was like right on, spot on, you know, REM, Susanna Hoffs, Tom Petty, you know, it goes on and on. But it's all great stuff. So thank you very much for turning me on to those guys. Also enjoyed your tribute to The Fall, and the Van Halen week brought back a lot of memories. I think my buying habits with Van Halen were the opposite of Jim's. I was in pretty hard for the first two records, bought those in real time, And then I kind of lost interest. I think I moved on to, you know, sort of punk new wave stuff by then. But I did see them live a few times right around the time, right after Van Halen 2 came out. One time at the Forum and also one time at this festival called the California Music, you know, the California World Music Festival. It was held at the Los Angeles Coliseum in April 1979. 2-day event. I only went to the first day, which was headlined by my favorite band at the time, the Mighty Aerosmith. Opening up, the Boomtown Rats. Remember, this was 1979. The Boomtown Rats were like punk rock to that crowd of, you know, mostly hard rock fans. And I remember Bob Geldof pulled out a camera and said something like, you know, the folks at home aren't going to believe this. I'm going to take a picture. And, you know, nearly everyone in the crowd flipped them off. And I thought that was great. I love that. But back to the Van Halen portion, they were second billed. And they came out there and they just blew the place apart. And so much so that while Aerosmith was on, people were leaving because Van Halen clearly smoked them. And Aerosmith. Hey, Craig Rosen again. I'm pulling an Echo Park Jimmy. I was in the middle of my story and just cut off, but got to keep going. Anyway, like I said, Van Halen, they just smoked them. I mean, they were incredible. I remember there were lots of close-ups of David Lee Roth feeling his spandex-clad body on the screen. But, you know, as far as just rocking the joint, they if the Coliseum had a roof on it, they would have blown the roof off the place. But anyway, I was a huge Aerosmith fan, and these people were leaving during Aerosmith's headlining set, and I was getting pissed off, you know. What was I, you know, 14-year-old Craig was like, or 15-year-old Craig, well, 79, 16-year-old Craig was like, what the hell, how could you leave when Aerosmith is playing, you know? Sit your ass back down. They didn't listen. Anyway. Back to Van Halen, like I said, I was pretty much out after the second album. I did get, you know, buy some of those records, and later when I worked in the industry, I got all, you know, CDs for free in the Van Hagar era. And I did interview I never interviewed David Lee Roth, and I much prefer the David Lee Roth version of Van Halen, but I did interview Sammy once for my number one albums book, and he's a really nice guy, and, you know, that's all I can say. He's a great guy, nice guy, but the David Lee Roth Van Halen rocks way harder than Van Hagar. And a few other things worth mentioning. You know, like I said, you know, I've kind of moved on, but I really did dig Aztec Camera's version of Jump. You guys should pull that out. You know, it's sort of like, you know, Van Halen meets the Velvet Underground or something.
I get up. Nothing gets me down. Well, you've got it tough. I seem the toughest soul around. And I know, baby, just how you feel. You got to roll with the punches just to get to what's real. I can't just see me standing here. I've got my back against the record machine. I ain't the worst that you've seen. I don't you know what I mean? I you might as well jump. Well, you might as well.
Pretty cool. And also, when you're talking about you mentioned the Gene Simmons sessions. When I was going through my Van Halen records and CDs, I noticed I had a homemade CD labeled Van Halen Zero. And that is the demo sessions recorded with producer Gene Simmons, and that's out there. It's a good listen, and I think it's up on YouTube, so check it out. And that's all I have here on my notes. Maybe if Echo Park Jimmy could loan me a dog, I'll get back to my regular listening schedule. My dog still probably got another 3 weeks till he's fully recovered. But yeah, I'm going to catch up with you guys. It's not listen every day for me for now. It's binge when you can. But take care. Keep up the good work. Chat with you later.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Craig.
It's beautiful as always.
How did the dog break its toe? Like, that seems like a hard thing for a dog to do,
yeah,
right?
I didn't know dogs had toes, and I have a couple dogs, but it's too bad.
Yeah.
I feel bad about that.
I hope he's doing okay.
He probably has to wear a cone, which is a bummer, because they'll be licking those wounds. That's the problem with dogs.
So speedy recovery.
Yeah, speedy recovery to the dog.
First off. And then, okay, so there were quite a few things there. The Boomtown Rats, the photo, you know, they got to think this is way, way, way before like cell phones, stuff like that. So he has like an actual camera on stage.
Polaroid.
Wants to take a picture of how big the crowd is,
right? Yeah.
And everybody flips him off. That would just be fantastic.
Oh, I love that.
And he's, Craig is absolutely right. At that time in music history, you know, a band like the Boomtown Rats just would not fit on that bill.
Very new wave. They didn't like Mondays.
People's attitudes toward music were not like they are today.
No,
I don't think so.
Different.
Yes. So there's that. And then, what else? I didn't know the Gene Simmons stuff. I didn't know you could find that. So I'm going to look for that.
Me too. I want to hear that. I actually have never heard it and I didn't know kind of it was out there. So that's cool. I just thought it was something they kind of did and threw away because nobody really thought it was, you know, what they were trying to go for.
I do know about the Aztec camera jump. That's a good cover.
It is. I actually have a 10-inch record with that on it. Yeah. It's a very unusual package, but I like it a lot too. It's really fun.
So lots of good stuff there in that call.
Yeah. And I will say this. I appreciate that, you know, Craig is catching up and binging. And we do say, Jim, listen every day.
Right.
That's what we want you to do. But we understand there are times when you can't do that.
That's right.
And I'll relate a quick anecdote. I saw an old friend of mine and he told me, man, I was listening to your podcast and then one day I just fell off. And then when I saw how many I'd missed, I didn't try to catch up. I felt like I'd failed. I didn't listen every day. So I kind of gave up. And I said, it's not like that.
No.
You know, you can jump back in at any time. It's me and Jim. You know, you're not going to miss that much. You can get right back in the swing of things and then go back later. So I appreciate the binge. And, you know, Craig's thoughts on listening. So, but we want you to listen to every day, but we understand life gets complicated.
Right. And I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And because there are many times when I think to myself, how are we able to do this every day? But that's another issue.
But
I will say this, that you can, you know, jump in and find stuff that you like. And I think we cover a wide range of things. And also, as the person on this team who actually posts the episodes.
Yes.
I've tried lately, over the last, I don't know, few months or so, to make the titles of the episode sort of as straightforward and simple as possible so that you can scan that and then find what you want to listen to.
Because I know
that we're at a point now where probably nobody's going to go through and listen to all this stuff. So you can find the stuff that interests you the most. All right. We have another call.
Excellent.
Let's do that.
Hey, Jim and Patrick, it's Justin Steiner from Valparaiso, Indiana again. Just finished listening to Van Halen Week. Really nice job with you guys and Kevin. I just obviously finished listening to the 1984, which was the last one you guys talked about. I have a couple memories associated with that. So in the summer of 84, I was in between 7th and 8th grade, and I went down to Ball State University for a week-long swimming camp. Obviously, you know, the hits had been on the radio by that point, knew them, but I have distinct memory of being in the indoor pool. I was a butterflyer, and so, you know, you lift your head out of the water every couple seconds or so, and the people, I'm sure they're, you know, college kids, were blasting 1984 on the boombox, so I was swimming, you know, 300 butterflies or whatever and pop up and hear just little snippets and bits, and it kind of just worked its way in. Never bought the album at that point, though. Waited all the way until Christmas. I wanted a Sony Walkman. That was what I wanted. And I got it, and I got a couple of cassette tapes with it, and one of them was 1984, which I just love playing. Actually, there's a terrible picture of me with my new Walkman on, with the headphones on backwards, because I hadn't even figured out that it was a left and a right at that point, which, you know, as an eighth grader is kind of embarrassing. But, you know, there's a picture of me with those headphones, and I also was reading a Choose Your Own Adventure book. So that shows you, you know, eighth grade nerdy Justin back then, which was okay. But I'm sure I was listening to 1984 in that picture, because that was the first one I had to tear into and listen to those initial tapes. So anyway, fun kind of revisiting all that, and I'm happy to listen every day. Keep it up. Bye.
All right, great call.
Great call. I want a Walkman and a Van Halen cassette for Christmas this year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what's funny about those, if you remember those old Sony headphones.
Mm-hmm. The orange ones or
the
whatever.
The orange ones. Mm-hmm. were kind of small. They had like a curve to them, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this happened to just about everybody. You first get the Walkman and you get those headphones and you put it on. It's like almost like intuitively you think it should curve toward the front, right?
Yeah, I remember.
And then you look at the left, right, and realize it goes the other way. But so I could see how that would happen, because yeah. I think almost everybody had that same experience of like, this, it seems like it should go this way, but it actually goes the other way.
It was really early in headphone culture. You didn't really know
that's right.
You know, there was one side you were supposed to put on.
That's right. So that was good.
Yeah, that was great.
Thank you very much.
I love the thought of like just popping your head out of the water while your lungs are going at full capacity and you're in Van Halen.
Yeah, it's just like great. A bit at a time, yeah. All right, well, thanks for those calls. We have a couple more calls and another email, really good stuff about Van Halen. In fact, you're really going to want to hear tomorrow's episode, because it's one of the funniest calls I think we've ever received.
Oh, really? That's
on the
fantastic.
Show.
That's saying something.
Yes, we're going to close out with that tomorrow.
Okay.
And until then, please listen to Rock in the Suburbs.
Every day.
As we have mentioned, you can find it on the big podcast platforms. And then also visit our website, suburbspod.com.
Mm-hmm.
Email us, as these people have done, rock@suburbspod.com, mm-hmm. or call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. Or find us on social media. The handle is suburbspod on all those places. And let's go to tomorrow.
Sounds good.
More about Van Halen. We will talk to you then.
Time will tell if we're going to stand the test of time.